Vedanta teacher James Swartz on Bhagavad Gita. An audio workshop brought to you by meinyogalehrer.de, recorded in Yoga Vidya Westerwald Ashram in Germany on March 2013. Part 11 of 13.
Sarva Vedanta Siddhanta Gocharam Tamagocharam Govindam Paramanandam Sadgurum Pranatosmyam. Okay, so joy is not in the object, enlightenment's not experiential, it's knowledge of who I am. For knowledge I need a means of knowledge, proven, valid means of knowledge. I need to be qualified, and I need a qualified teacher. And then I expose my mind to the teaching for as long as it takes. Depending on my qualifications, I may understand and set myself free in a matter of months or a year or two. Sometimes it takes longer. It only depends upon my qualifications. If you follow this, if you have faith in the scripture and the burning desire and these other qualifications are there, then you'll go very quickly. Otherwise, it will take longer. And in order to develop them, you should just keep working. Get your life very sattvic and pure and clean, and just continue with your inquiry. Yes?
In terms of recognizing a teacher, so that we won't go wrong. I've had some bad experiences.
Oh, sure.
Can you recommend something to...
No, yeah, well, almost anyone in the tradition I come from, I could recommend. Because there's been no scandals. There was only one scandal that I know of in the last 40 years in the lineage I come from. It's the Swami Chinmayananda Dayananda lineage. There's only been one scandal that I know of. It's a sex and money scandal involving one of the gurus. But of the several hundred teachers that are in that lineage, everyone is impeccable. But outside that, I can't say.
No, I didn't mean in person, no, but I mean what to look out for, or what, maybe that is not.
Well, the thing, see, the reason you have qualification is because you need to, and this is where dispassion and discrimination come in, because you can actually, even if you need to be able to separate the teacher from the teaching. You should have faith in the teacher, it's true, but the Vedanta is very unusual in that we don't take responsibility for the teaching. That makes it very easy for us, because I'm not saying this is my stuff. All I have to do is present the teaching to you as it's meant to be taught. There's a method for teaching. You can't just teach it. You're just going to read a book and teach it. You have to learn the method. There's Vedanta is called a sampradaya or a methodology. It is a way to teach, and that you need to learn. You basically learn that by being taught. That's how I learned it. I didn't go to guru school. I just sat there and observed how my teacher taught, and then I picked up the method of teaching from him. Like that, because I've always been a communicator, and I like teaching. I come from a family of teachers. My mother was a teacher, my brother was a teacher, and I know how to communicate with people. I was a businessman. I was very successful because I could communicate what I was selling to a person very nicely. So, and I can sell these ideas properly because it's a beautiful system. It works, and it's not personal. So, you know, you need to have faith in the teacher also. And the teacher should be an example of the teaching. If you have a teacher who you know, you can feel if a person's free. You can feel if a person's honest. Can you? Can you tell? Huh? A mature person can tell if a person's cheating or lying or not straight. Hmm? You can tell.
Huh? But the case is difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult. Both of you know that problem. Some teachers are very, very, very clever.
But can you say something to the faith in the teacher? Because I got a mail from a friend of you, and she was saying, don't trust any teacher. And in Vedanta is mentioned, the trust in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And it's necessary too to have the faith into the teacher.
You should have faith in the teacher. A mature person, absolutely. But you should only, in a relationship with a teacher, you should only look at how they treat you. Huh? Only go by how they treat you. Because people project. It's very difficult to teach if you have an ego. Believe me. Because people project. When I sit here, you don't really know who I am. You don't really know. You haven't seen me before, you don't know me. Huh? So you'll have projections. Huh? You'll have ideas about what I am or what I should be, whether you like me. If I say certain things or act in a certain way, you may really like me or you may really dislike me. You know? So it's very difficult when you sit here to care. I mean, let me be honest. I don't care whether you like me or not. I really don't. I don't care if you love me. I don't care if you like me at all. I do think it's good for you to listen. Huh? And the methodology of Vedanta is three stages of this teaching. It's called Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. These are the three stages of Vedanta teaching. And the first stage is called listening or hearing. We don't ask that you like us or dislike us or anything, but if you're a dispassionate person, you listen carefully, the Vedanta will convince you. Never mind the teacher. If the teacher is a good teacher, the logic of this teaching will convince you, and you should fall in love with the teaching and the logic of it and the knowledge. You should really become a devotee of the knowledge and not of the teacher. Huh? Understand? Because I may do some things you don't like. Understand? I'm not trying to behave to please you. I'm just being myself. And maybe some things I do you don't like. Some things I say you don't like. But if you're a mature person, you can put your likes and dislikes aside and just listen. And the reason Vedanta is so hard is because we, in the first stage, is called Shravana, or listening. Not just hearing, but listening. It's because you need to set aside your beliefs and opinions so you can actually hear what's being said. Normally, we interpret what we hear. Okay? It goes through a filter. And this doesn't work for Vedanta. You won't hear the truth if you're interpreting what you hear in light of what you think or feel. Now, you can do that. You will do that later. But when you come to the class, you should just clear your mind. That's why you have a little chant. We hope you're meditating. Your mind is clear. You're just present and ready to hear what's being said. Huh? You don't want to be judging it. You know, like, I've forgotten your name.
Sundari.
Yeah, she's in Dzogchen Buddhism.
I was.
Yeah. And you get a lot of knowledge. and ideas. And it's not good or bad necessarily. But here you hear Vedanta and then you're always comparing.
Yeah.
Huh? Or yoga, you're in yoga and you hear Vedanta. And then you're trying to compare. How does Vedanta fit into yoga idea, what I think yoga is? How does it fit into Christianity, if I'm a Christian? How does it fit into my belief system or my ideas? And that doesn't work.
No, it's just trying to understanding what, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand. I wasn't really... I understand. I know.
That's why I was asking what is the same about Vedanta and Dzogchen,
yeah.
Because it's just like a transmission thing from me, you know, to...
Yeah, but here's this tendency to like look at what I hear in light of what I know and judge what I hear according to what I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that doesn't work. I've got to, that's why we said that faith in the teaching is the biggest thing, that and burning desire. You can just assume you have the burning desire, then faith in the teaching becomes the most important thing. Because you've got to believe that what you hear is the standard by which you judge what you know. In other words, you have to be ready to give up what you know and take the teaching, the knowledge of Vedanta, to be what you know. And that's very hard. That's very hard. And this is why self-inquiry is so difficult. And it's natural to do this now when there's nothing wrong with it. That's what we call the manana phase. The first phase, you should just be pure and open and just hear it. Don't think about it, just listen and follow the logic very carefully. Follow the teaching step by step. You see how systematic this teaching is. I just give you step by step. I give you the logic, explain the whole thing. 1, 2, 3, 4. You learn like that. And then when you're out of the classroom, when you're after the talk, you go home, wherever it is, and you take all your beliefs and opinions and ideas, what you think about this topic, and you look at it in light of the teaching. It's called manana. It's called reflection. And then you see, well, is this really the way I see it? Is that really fit here? Or am I trying to make this teaching fit into what I believe? What we find is that Western people, particularly about spiritual things, they come to India, they hear these teachings, they read these books, and they just pick up what they want to hear. They just only hear only the things that fit with their beliefs and system, and then they come back and then they become teachers over here. And they picked up this from Buddhism, and they picked this from Hinduism, and they got this from Zen, and they got this from here, and that from there, and so forth. And they cobble it all together, and they put all these practices together and all these teachings together, and all you've got is a mush, a mess, a big muss. And you'll end up being confused. Even if you're not a teacher, so you have to be willing to like take the what is being said on faith and throw out what doesn't fit. I was perfect for it because I was so sick and tired of spirituality. I read every book and I did every practice. I was like Mr. Spiritual. I looked like an Indian. My mother, I remember one time I came back from India. I had this long beard, and these beard beads, and I had tilak on my forehead, and I'm wearing a dhoti. Can you imagine? and she comes to, and I was sitting in meditation in the basement. We had a recreation room in the basement. My mother didn't know I was there, and she came down looking for something. And she saw me sitting there, and she broke down in tears. She just started crying, and she said, "What's wrong with your own religion, James?" And there were tears streaming down her face. I did everything. I was crazy, spiritually crazy. I had all these samadhis and all the experiences. I had all the satoris. If you want to read my story, we published the book of all my spiritual experiences. And I had all kinds of nutty, crazy ideas that I picked up in India from all these sadhus and reading these books, Autobiography of the Yogi, and flying around and materializing and bilocating, and God, all this stuff was just, and I put it all together, I could talk about it and make it sound really, really cool, and it was just nonsense. And one day I said, this isn't working, I quit. I just quit, I said, I'm not doing it anymore. I threw away all my India stuff, my beads, everything. I said, I'm going back to school, get an education, and get a job, and be a normal person.
But without that experience, you probably wouldn't be there where you
well,
are.
Well, yeah, and that very day, I met my guru through a whole miraculous series of things. And I realized then I was ready to just be totally zero. I felt like a little baby. I felt like I didn't know anything, and it felt so good. I was so empty. I was so pure and so clear. That was all rubbish. I picked it up. And then the Vedanta went in just incredible. It just, I was just so inspired. And within 6 weeks, my guru gave me the most incredible honor. He said to me, he said, you know, I'm a heart patient, and I sometimes pass out, sometimes lose consciousness, if you would like it, I have a job that you can have. And I said, what job is that? He said, you just be next to me all the time, and you carry my oxygen bottle. He had a little oxygen bottle. And so if he passed out or something like that, then I'd stick the oxygen in, and then he'd bring him back, and we'd get into the hospital and fix him up, you know? And it was like, oh, would you like the job? I said, well, you bet I'd like the job. You bet. Because I got to be with this teacher 24/7. Mm-hmm. And the only reason he did that and chose me was because I was ready. He had thousands of disciples. He had tens of thousands of devotees, and he had thousands of disciples. He was a very, very, very great Mahatma. And he chose me simply because I was absolutely clean and pure and open, and that's all I wanted, and that he knew it. And it was just easy, because I didn't have to fight with it and argue with it and think, oh, you know, this has and that, blah, 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 and I know better and all that sort of thing. So, and it worked very quickly. Within a year and a half, I absolutely knew who I was without a shadow of a doubt. And I stayed every single day. So, on the other hand, you know, he was a human being. And I didn't deify him. He didn't want me worshiping him. He became very angry at me one time. I was doing namaskar, you know, and acting like a devotee, and he just screamed at me. There was 100 people there. Don't do namaskar! He just went like that, you know, and he told me off. He said, I don't want a devotee. I want a disciple. You cannot behave like that. You cannot worship me. You cannot look up to me. That does not work here, he said. And from then on, I had to sit directly across from him, and I had to talk to him like I talked to anybody. Like I talked to the bus driver or the cashier at the supermarket or any normal person. He was not, directly, simply, you say what you have to say, I reply, and that's it. So, you know, but he had his stuff. But I was happy to overlook his stuff. I didn't care. You can do whatever you want. It's up to you. I trusted him. I knew that what he was saying was the truth. And he was always there for me whenever I needed him, which was very rare. Because Bhagawan was right there in my mind all the time. And I just took it in. I thought about it and I lived it 100%. And it doesn't take long if you have that kind of dedication and that kind of faith and commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So you listen, then you look at what you have in light of the teaching, and you throw out the ignorance and you keep the knowledge. You have a lot of knowledge. Most of it you know. You don't have to throw that away. You just have to know the difference between knowledge and ignorance. Understand? And we're confusing what's knowledge with ignorance. And there's a lot of ignorance that looks very knowledgeable, looks very, you know, looks like knowledge. And once you understand, then you retain the good stuff and you throw out the useless stuff. That's all. It's just a process of discrimination until you're absolutely clear that you are awareness. Now, that may take time. So there's one more factor in this little talk on qualifications and teaching, and that is called devam or kala. Kala or devam means time. Your moksha, your enlightenment, fits into the enlightenment of the whole planet. Remember, we've been talking about Ishwara here, the total. You're not just doing this for you. Huh? You're doing this for everybody, because everybody is you. And Bhagavan's going to give you your moksha when it suits Bhagavan. Understand? So you need to have that. That's why you need the faith, the dispassion, the discrimination. And when you understand what Vedanta is, you can relax, because you will get there. And when you get there, it doesn't matter. You don't care. It's fine. You've got the most beautiful vehicle there is. There's no vehicle, there's no means of knowledge like this. This is the granddaddy of all the spiritual traditions that came out of India. It's behind all the traditions in India. It's the source. Vedanta is the source, the Upanishads, the source of world spirituality. It's not a path. It's a pathless path. It's just the knowledge that's behind every path. Understand? You can get Vedanta through Buddhism, through Christianity, through animism. Because Vedanta is just the knowledge that's behind the whole spiritual path. This just happens to be the most powerful and sophisticated vehicle and the quickest way to get it if you're qualified. Otherwise, you can knock around for years and years and years and years in the spiritual world. Going from one teaching to another teaching, reading one thing, another thing. And you'll just get more and more frustrated. So, need a means of knowledge? Need to be qualified, need a teacher. Okay, then what do we do now? Now, we teach you the self. See, we haven't even got to the teaching yet. Okay? We haven't, all of this, we spent the last 2 hours, and we haven't even got to the self yet. Isn't that something? Huh? See? Because enlightenment has to fit into the whole picture of my life, of life. I have to see it in terms of the whole of my life and in terms of the whole of existence. So then we teach the self. That's step number 5. What is the self? The self, very simple. This isn't a long talk. The self's easy. Huh? Self's very easy. You see Krishna, look at Krishna. How many was it? About 5 minutes or 10 minutes Krishna talked to Arjuna? Huh? He told, gave about 10 minutes talk to Arjuna, and then he saw, oh, that's all I can say, this guy is not getting it. Right? And then we get on with the next stage. Well, the self is what? Limitless, non-dual, unborn, ordinary, unconcerned, actionless awareness. we'll just give what, 7 basic words. There are a lot of words, all of them helpful, useful. They're all indicators. You see, to say what the self is, how can you say what the self is with a word? Because it's everything that is. And what, you know, this is not everything that is, so we could call it a clock. That's easy. Say clock and you think of this. But when I say self, what do you think of? You think of the whole of existence?
The big puppets.
So to teach you the self, we have to teach you indirectly. You will get direct knowledge, but we have to teach you indirectly, and we have to explain the meaning of the words. Like, for example, I said, one of the words I said was, and we said it all along, the self is limitless. Now, when I say limitless, when I say that word, what do you think about?
No limitless, infinite.
No form.
No time, no space.
How can you relate to that?
We can't.
But so that's a hard word, isn't it? Now that's a common word in our tradition. In fact, you've heard the word Brahman?
Yes.
How many have heard the word Brahman? Oh, good. The self is called Brahman. Now what does Brahman mean? It means limitless. You've heard of Paramatma? The Atma means the self, and Paramatma means the limitless self. Param means limitless. Now, what does limitless mean? Another meaning of Brahman is big. But, that's not a good word either, is it? Because it means Brahman's not small. And if Brahman's everything that is, then how can Brahman only be big? He'd have to be small too, wouldn't he? In fact, there's an Upanishad that says it's bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. So take care of that notion. Well, limitless means this. It's very simple. And this is something you can relate to. You can actually tie in to your own experience. Mind you, Brahman means, or limitless means, not modify, does not modify to experience. Is not limited by experience. In other words, like if my body modifies to experience, doesn't it? If a fire starts here, that fire will burn my body, and my body will be modified or changed by that fire, isn't it? Okay. But awareness doesn't modify to any experience. Fire, Krishna said, fire doesn't wet it, water doesn't burn it, water doesn't burn it, fire, water doesn't wet it, fire doesn't burn it. Weapons can't cleave it. In other words, you can blow, you can take the atomic, the nuclear bomb, and put it on awareness, and awareness won't wiggle. Awareness won't move one inch. The whole, you can put 10 atomic bombs, 10 nuclear weapons, all at once explode them, and awareness won't even twitch. It means it's not affected by experience. It's not affected by my thoughts. It's not affected by my feelings. Now, what part of you is like that? I just have to find that part of me that that's true for. Yes.
In the Western philosophy, when you read Kant and Hegel, there is said that consciousness or awareness is limitless because every notion or every thought of limitation requires the limitless awareness.
Requires awareness.
Requires awareness. So that's a logical, simple method to make it clear.
Absolutely.
To talk about a limitation, I need me, I can't be limited.
That's right. And has anything changed you? Has anything that happened to you changed you?
No.
Oh. Huh?
Yeah.
That's what limitless means. Means nothing that's happened has changed me. Things that happen change my body. Things that happen change my emotions. Things that happen change my mind. But nothing changes me, does it? I'm still the same. Right now, what happened a minute ago, it hasn't changed me at all. Now this experience is here and this experience goes, and yet I'm still the same, aren't I?
But we think of something changed us.
Pardon?
But we think of something changed us.
That's right. Yeah, and why? Why? Because we identify with the upadhi. Huh? You identify with the instruments of awareness. You don't identify with awareness. The experience changes my instruments, my means of knowledge and experience, they're changed, but they don't change me. If I identify with the instrument, then I feel like I'm going through changes. Somebody calls you up, how you doing? Oh, I'm going through a lot of changes. Means what? Having emotional problems. Right? But I am not going through changes, am I? Changes are going through me, aren't they? I'm like space, and what? Objects are passing through space, but space isn't what? Changed by the objects that pass through it, is it? Is it? No. This room is full of space. There's nobody in it. Now, 30 people come in this room. Has space been affected by the 30 people in the room? No. The space has not changed one bit, has it? No matter what happens in the room, space remains exactly the same. It's between all the objects, and it's within all the objects. It pervades every object. And me, awareness, pervade every experience that happens to me. I'm the screen on which the objects are playing. When you see a movie, one of these shoot 'em ups, you know, like 100 people die, you know, the body counts. These violent movies, and blood everywhere, and buildings blown up, and people dying right and left, and everything, huh? And then, and it's really awful. Huh? And then the movie's over, and the screen goes blank. Is there anything left on the screen? Is there any blood on the screen? Are there any bits and pieces left on the screen? No, nothing's left. Huh? Nothing ever happened. From awareness's point of view, nothing ever happened. Nothing changed me. Awareness is purnaha. Purnaha means what? Full. Remember I told you the story about Ganesha's belly? Huh? First night. That's a symbol of awareness. It's so full that you can't put anything in it. That's why it's called bliss. That's why it's bliss, because there's no sense of dissatisfaction. There's not even one little tiny space where there's no awareness. So it can never be dissatisfied. Ramanandam paramasukadam. Paramasukadam means what? Limitless satisfaction. I am always satisfied because I'm full. Ramanandam. limitless what? Awareness. Paramasukhadam kevalam. Kevalam means what? Perfect. No imperfections. Kevalam jnanamurtim. With a form, and how is that realized? Through knowledge. The only access to awareness is through knowledge. And it appears as knowledge. What kind of knowledge? I am. Well, you can just say I am. If you know that I am means awareness. I am limitless, non-dual, actionless, ordinary, unconcerned, unborn awareness. Ordinary. Get that one. That's a deal, huh? That's a big one. Huh? Oh, I don't want to hear that. Huh? I don't want to hear it's ordinary. I want it to be special. I'm light of 1,000 suns. Boom! Explosions, orgasms, infinite bliss going everywhere, floating through the disembodied, da-da-da-da-da. No. Just ordinary.
The highest consciousness.
The highest consciousness.
You got this word in yoga.
Yeah, the higher consciousness. The highest state, the most exalted state. Oh, it's like pornography. the spiritual literature, yeah, it's masturbatory. Huh? The self. It's just your ordinary awareness. That, because of which, I know what I know. It's not what I know. It's that, because of which, I know what I know. Every minute you know something, don't you? Every second, something is known to you. Every second you know something. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Objects are always there and they're always known by me. And I am that because of which I know what I know. And that's what? Awareness. It's simple, ever, always present. Well, now that takes away this running after, huh? Some experience, right? Now, why would I be running off to some higher state? Oh no, it's in a high. It's a fourth state. Yeah, that's where it is. It's in the fourth state. You got these three, and then you got to go to the fourth because awareness is there, but it's not in these states here. No, help me. It's always present. Well, what's always present? Tell me what's always present. Me. I'm always present. Unborn. This is a hard one, isn't it? Huh? Hey, is there any evidence that you're born? Where's the evidence that you are born?
My passport.
So that's your body. That's your body. Is it? That's your body. Eternal. That means what? Doesn't die. Where's the evidence? Hey, there's no such thing as death. Did you know that? Why not? Because somebody has to be there, huh, to observe death, your death, don't they? Because your death is, you can't say there's death apart from the knowledge of the death, and you can't have knowledge of death unless you're present, can you? So you never die, do you? There's no evidence that you die. Zero. It's only a belief that I die. The body dies, yes, the objects in awareness, they live and die. That's simple enough. Everybody knows that. But what about me? I can't die. There's no evidence whatsoever. It's purely a concept that I die. Ekam nityam vimalamachalam. Ekam, one. Nityam, eternal. Vimalamachalam, without mala, without what? Impurities. Achalam, unchanging. Chala means chala, changing. Achala means unchanging. Sarvadi sakshibhutam means what? Always seen, always clear like the sky. Always clear like the sky. Sky looks like it's blue, you look, but it's not, it's clear. Sarvadi sakshibhutam bhavatitam. Oh, this is a good one. Beyond experience. Means what? Beyond means what? Oh, how far do I have to go to get there? That's not what beyond means. Beyond means observes experience, knows experience. It's right, beyond is right here now. You're right here now, beyond what? Experience. You're behind experience. Experience is an object, and it's what? Known to me. This is why you can report your experience very clearly. Because you're always beyond your experience. No matter what happens, whether you go high or low or in between, you're always just here, what, beyond your experience, and you can report what happens very nicely because you're beyond experience. Bhavatitam triguna rahitam. Beyond what? Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Experience is made up of what? Three energies beyond what? All my experiences. Experience is only Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Those are the only three energies in the mind, in experiential reality. And I'm beyond the knower, Triguna, Rahitam. Rahitam means beyond. Atita, Rahitam means beyond the mind. Brahmanandam, Paramasugadam, Kevalam Yanamurtim, Dvandvatitam, Dvandvatitam, beyond duality, Dvanda means duality, Dvandvatitam, Ganganasadrisham, always clear, seen, the seer, Sadrisham, Tattvamasyadilaksham, what's that mean? As revealed by the statement in Vedanta, Tat Tvam Asi, you are that. The awareness in you is the awareness in everything. The light shining in you is the same light that's shining in a tree, in a plant, in a dog, in a stone, anywhere. You are that light. Chantam Shivam Sundaram. The beauty, what? That makes beauty beautiful. Huh? You see a beautiful sunset, but you're way more beautiful than the sunset. You know why? Because without you, there's no sunset. Huh? Whatever beauty is there in the sunset is just a pale reflection of the beauty of you. Sundaram, Sundari, Sundaram, Niranjanam, again, pure, no stains, no spots in you. That's why you don't have to fix yourself, because you're already pure. That's why you don't have to be good. Shivam, Shantam, Shivam, Sundaram. Shivam means what? Always good. Always good. No need to be good. I am goodness itself. So on. So, you're taught the self. This is yourself. This is who you are. And then what happens next? Well, hopefully, everybody gets up and leaves. Right? Yeah. Hopefully, that's it. Well, what are you sitting here for? You know, that's what Krishna's doing. He says, he's just teaching you. You're the self, he's going on and on and on and on. And then Arjuna's sitting there, and Krishna thinks, why isn't this guy getting his weapons and going and fighting? What's wrong with this boy? And Arjuna's sitting there, I got a few more questions to ask you, sir. Because that seems like, that doesn't seem right to me. I don't know what you're talking about. So then we have the next teaching. You know, we start yoga. Krishna said, I taught you who you are. I taught you Sankhya. Now I need to teach you yoga. See the whole thing, how it fits? You don't start yoga, you do yoga after. You do yoga if you don't get it. If you're qualified, you get it and then you go on. But if you're not qualified, then you have to do yoga. Because the yoga will qualify you. Understand? Anyway, 6 o'clock, dinner time. You want to do some Q&A finish this tonight? Or should we do Q&A tonight and then finish it tomorrow? I haven't really finished the whole self-inquiry thing.
Thank you for listening. For more information about Vedanta, yoga and self-inquiry, visit shiningworld.com, yogavidya.de or meinyogalehrer.de.